Hello and welcome to the third edition of Polling Matters. My name's Kieran Pedley.
And I'm Leo Barassi.
And today we're going to be talking about the Green Party. One of the key trends of the last couple of months in Westminster voting intention polls has been the declining Labour lead. Much has been made of Ed Miliband and much has been made of UKIP on this podcast, no less. But perhaps less has been made of the Green Party and what's happening with them. And Leo's going to be talking about that today.
Well, there's a good case for suggesting that the decline of the Labour Party's poll over the last few weeks has coincided with the increase in the Green Party's poll. And that's no coincidence that they are two sides of the same coin, because essentially Labour Party voters have been defecting to the Greens. Now, that's a little difficult to prove, because there hasn't been an election in the last few years that we can look at and say they voted Labour, now they're going to vote Green. Instead, what I'm talking about are people who a few months ago said that they were going to vote Labour and possibly now are going to vote Green. And in fact, just to add another complexity to it, I think there's a good case for suggesting that they're people who in 2010 voted Lib Dem, probably towards the end of 2010 after the coalition was formed, said that now they're going to vote Labour. But recently, a chunk of them have said, in fact, we're going to vote Green.
So these are the progressive, centre-left, lefty, whatever you want to call it, voters that traditionally voted Lib Dem for their anti-war, pro-environment, whatever it might be, anti-tuition fees, anti-austerity policies. But now they're going to the Green Party and not Labour.
Yeah, we're talking about trends. We're not talking about everyone. We're talking about subgroups. So about a third of the Green Party's support are people who in 2010 were Lib Dem voters. But don't forget, Lib Dem voters are still three times as likely to now be voting Labour than they are to be voting Greens. So although some of them have gone to Greens, this isn't that the entirety of that mass that defected from Lib Dems to Labour, particularly at the end of 2010, have all gone to Green. In fact, as well, about 10% of Green supporters are people who voted Labour in 2010. So this isn't as simple as saying these are people who voted Lib Dem, thought they were going to vote Labour, and have now gone to Greens. It's, as it often is, it's a bit more complicated than that. But what we can do is look in a bit more detail about who they are. And you say they're liberal, left, former Lib Dems, perhaps international types. Well, there's a few things about them that make them stand out from voters for other parties. They are a bit different. So one of the most surprising things that I saw when I looked at this is they're a majority female. Now, that doesn't sound like it should be that surprising, but interestingly, because women are more likely at the moment to say they don't know who they're going to vote for, this means that the Greens are the only party where more people who will vote for them are women than men.
That's a trend I've seen, actually, in some of the polls I've run in the past, where if you're asking, it's actually quite funny, when you're asking something factual, so, you know, name the percentage of GDP that's our aid budget or whatever it might be, a fairly complicated fact, you'll tend to find that men and women will be just as likely to get the answer right. There's no gender difference there. But men will be much more likely to get it wrong and women will be much more likely to admit they don't know. And I think there's something in the some gender stereotypes there, but it's consistently borne out in data. So it's interesting you mentioned the don't knows.
Yeah. And it's surprising that the Greens are the only party in that camp that do seem to have attracted more women.
But presumably they're relatively popular amongst the young?
Yeah, well, this is one of the other standout things for them. So they in fact have more people who said they're going to vote for them who are 18 to 24 years old than 65 or older. So just in that six-year age group, they've managed to get more people than everyone aged over 65, which makes them easily the youngest of all the parties.
Well, of course, one of the problems there, though, is that, you know, the younger voters are much less likely to turn up, aren't they?
Yeah, absolutely. And you would expect that to be a problem for them. So I looked at a few of the opinion polls, which are quite helpful for this. And what we see is the Greens Party support are pretty consistently the lowest or the second lowest to say that they would definitely vote. Now, we do have to be a bit careful about how we talk about this, because, of course, the pollsters already weight or filter by turnout. So to an extent, that's already factored
in. It's priced in, yeah.
So I wouldn't want to say that you look at their support and then you have to mentally take a bit more out because some of them are not going to turn out. But you probably do still need to bear it in mind. And it's something that, from an electoral point of view, is probably, at least in the short term, is probably more of a problem for them than it is a benefit.
There's two ways, I suppose, you can look at the youth vote. On the one hand, you have this Barack Obama situation where you get lots of enthused activists that are out there pounding the streets, knocking on doors, getting out your vote. I don't think that's quite what we've got here. On the other hand, you have got that trend where younger people are much less likely to vote. I mean, even in the Scottish referendum, where turnout was astonishingly high, it was still higher amongst the older voters, wasn't it?
Yeah, yeah. And if all the people who said that they were running a Barack Obama-style campaign actually were, then I think the world would be very different.
I suppose one of the challenges for every party, but for the Greens, particularly the smaller parties, is how do you target your vote? You know, how well do you think the Greens can do at the next election?
Well, I was talking to a senior figure in the Green Party who told me that the Greens are going to get between 5 and 12 seats at the next election. So minimum of 5. And your eyebrows just went up and mine certainly did when I was talking to
it reminds me of a boxer
well.
Going into a fight with like Lennox Lewis or Floyd Mayweather talking about how they're going to knock him out in the first 5 rounds when everyone knows that's not going to happen. Does it? Or am I being unfair?
Well, so being a good nerd, I went straight home, left the party and had a look at some polls to see whether this claim could stand up, and from what I've seen so far, I'm pretty sceptical that they could get 5 seats. They've put out a list of about a dozen target seats, and as far as I can tell, not all of them have had constituency polls published. But of those that have, the two that stand out in their favour are Brighton Pavilion, which mm-hmm. Caroline Lucas already holds, and Norwich South, which is one of their key targets. Now, in Brighton, Caroline Lucas holds it. They are, in Ashcroft's latest poll, 12 points down on Labour. They're on 26, Labour's 38 now. That's pretty bad, but that's not insurmountable. That's the kind of thing that with a good election campaign you could possibly turn around. In Norwich, which last time was a very tight three-way marginal, Charles Clark, this is Norwich South, Charles Clark lost it last time. The Greens were a fairly close fourth, but there were three parties ahead of them. The Lib Dems won it. You would expect the Lib Dem vote to collapse. Labour will be looking at this very much as a regain. Ashcroft's latest poll put the Greens on 20, Labour on 33. So similar gap to Caroline Lucas's seat.
Those have potential, don't they?
Yeah, I mean, yeah.
To be fair to the Greens,
those are winnable. Those are the good news. The others that I looked at, and there's only three that I've been able to see, were less encouraging for them. So St Ives, Cambridge and Solihull, the Greens were on between 6 and 9%. The leading party in each of them was on between 32 and 37%. Mm. So
that's not
those,
happening, is it?
Those, I think, are not just a mountain to climb. That's just not going to be winnable for them. So possibly some of the others might be more encouraging news. But certainly from what I've seen, I think the constituency barrier is going to be a big issue. And to an extent, it's reflected in national polls. One of the perhaps slightly surprising things that that you see about them is their support is quite evenly spread across the social grades, and also, perhaps most problematically for them, evenly across the country. So they're not like the Tories, who are strongest in the southeast. They're not like Labour, who are strongest in the industrial heartlands. They're not like the Lib Dems, with a few pockets here and there. Their support seems to be fairly evenly across the country, which would be fine if we had, as I'm sure they want, a proportional electoral system. But when they're fighting constituency by constituency, you can really see that being a challenge for them. So the double problem that means is not only is it going to be harder for them to mobilise to get over the sort of 20-25% that they're going to need in any constituency if it's a multi-way marginal, but as the election comes around, they're going to even struggle to hold on to their sort of 6 to 10% supports, because there's going to be a squeeze. Every election, every constituency that they're fighting, Labour or the Lib Dems, are going to be saying to their potential supporters, we're the only ones who can beat the Tories here.
Yeah. I mean, if you look at it historically with the Lib Dems and currently with UKIP, I mean, you've got parties here that are at their peak polled in the 20s, where there's been a huge question mark over what their targeting is going to be like and how effective they're going to be. It was certainly a criticism, or not necessarily a criticism, but a question mark over UKIP a few years ago. You know, could they actually win seats? Would they actually get enough to win? And, of course, in a slightly roundabout way, they have, through defections and by-elections and things. But that's not necessarily a criticism that I think that people are levelling at UKIP anymore. If you look at the Lib Dems historically, they've always polled, the last 20 years, they've polled very, very well, certainly much, much better than the Greens. But even they have got much fewer seats than their vote share, they would argue, warrants. So for the Greens, this is clearly going to be a huge challenge, isn't it? Because ultimately their poll ratings are nowhere near either UKIP or the Liberal Democrats. But ultimately their currency in any coalition negotiations, in any future policy debate, is going to be seats. And it doesn't look like they're going to get very many, does it?
Well, once again, I think the game changer for them, let's assume that there isn't a green earthquake, and I think that's a question
environmentally friendly earthquake.
that's a question perhaps for us to talk about another time, but clearly what they'll be looking to do is get just enough seats that they can hold a balance of power in a coalition, and the only sensible negotiating policy for them to go in with would be electoral reform, because until that happens, or until their polling undergoes a UKIP-style revolution, then they're not going to break through the constituency barrier anytime soon.
I think there's an interesting side plot which would warrant its own podcast, but it is interesting and worth mentioning, is that, you know, in this age of austerity that this parliament has been, it's quite interesting that there's been no attack from the left. There's been no UKIP of the left that's emerged with a completely anti-austerity, anti-cuts message that's managed to break through and, you know, get 10, 20% of the vote, as there has been in other countries in Europe. So it's interesting that the Greens haven't managed to do that. I wonder whether that's something to do with the fact that Labour elected Ed Miliband as leader, and therefore, you know, they weren't hemorrhaging votes to the left, because generally speaking, the left was broadly happy with Ed Miliband.
I think, yeah, that's a really interesting question. The Greens would, I'm sure, argue differently, that they are the only party putting out a consistent green anti-austerity left-wing message. Labour, they would say Labour isn't doing it at all. But once they've said that, then I think it raises exactly your question of why they haven't won over the support of the not a majority, but the large minority of the country that is robustly anti-austerity.
And I suppose that's going to be one of their challenges during the debates that they are part of, isn't it? Is to try and actually get that message across.
It is. And finally, on to our finding of the week. What has caught your eye in this week's polls, Kieran?
Well, we were talking about UKIP in our previous episode, weren't we? And there was a poll from YouGov last week that I've only actually just caught today, which I thought was very interesting, which looked at whether or not different people would like to turn the clock back on Britain, and also how optimistic they were about their future. And what was striking was that UKIP supporters were much more likely than other parties to say they wanted to turn the clock back 20 or 30 years. 60% saying that they would. And the highest number from another party was Labour, actually, on 36, but, you know, almost half that amount. So that was very interesting. It may appeal to some of those older UKIP voters, maybe, who are disillusioned with change or the way the country's going, whether rightly or wrongly, depending on your views on those things. So that's interesting. But also, there's this thing about optimism for the future, and, you know, what percentage of people are optimistic about the prospects for British people in the next 20 to 30 years. UKIP overwhelmingly the least optimistic, just 15% saying that they're optimistic versus 31% Labour, and then, you know, majorities of Conservative and Liberal Democrat voters. And maybe that comes down to, you know, who's in government trying to... It's interesting that the Conservatives and Liberal Democrats were both the most optimistic. But I think this speaks quite heavily to the psychology of the UKIP voter, and maybe why they're going to be quite difficult for the Conservatives to win back in large numbers. Ultimately, they don't like the way the country's going. They're not necessarily confident in David Cameron to deliver the changes that they want. and they're not particularly optimistic about the future. And I guess a segue from that would be when we look at UKIP's economic policy going into the election, it's going to be tricky for them because typically they have a laissez-faire centre-right agenda. But ultimately, there is scope there, I think, amongst UKIP voters for something more populist and centre-right in a different way. So it's going to be fascinating to see what they do. But very much the pessimists of British politics, UKIP voters. And for those people that want to win them round, that's it's going to be a high bar to meet.
That was our third episode of Polling Matters. Thank you very much for listening. Our music is Pollinate by Kirk Pearson, licensed under Creative Commons. Join us next week.
Thanks very much.